It's time for JT the Brick.
This is a new regime led by Antonio Pierce, a former player who's won a Super Bowl.
Our vision is clear. Win a division.
He's the right guy at the right time for this job. Right guy, right time to get the Raiders back, not to greatness, to the playoffs.
Our intention of how we play, the execution of our play, the mindset of our team, that's what I'm looking for.
I would love to see Antonio Pierce have the opportunity to coach this Raider team. I think he deserves it.
JT the Brick.
This coach wants to be more physical. He wants to put his hands on players.
You got the Jordan rules, and I'm calling out from now on, as long as I'm here, the Patrick Mahomes rules.
I like when the head coach says this. I'm a season ticket holder.
Squeezing by the throat.
Antonio Pierce wants to get the black hole back to where it was in the Coliseum in Oakland. Let's help him.
And now, here's JT the Brick.
Welcome back to the JT the Brick Show. I'm Vinny Bonsignore, sitting in today for JT the Brick, and it was interesting hearing that little montage leading back into the show. And by the way, James Crepia from the Oregonian is going to join us in a couple of minutes. He's going to talk a lot about Jackson Powers Johnson, the Raiders' new guard. And boy, I'll tell you what, Oregon had a bunch of draft picks as well, so we'll get into that. But Antonio Pierce talking about how he wants to build a physical football team, and I think you saw that in the first two picks of the Raiders. And you kind of piggytail that or ducktail that to what happened last year in the draft picks last year. I think Tyree Wilson is a physical specimen who, now that he's healthy and is able to spend this offseason working on his craft rather than getting better, I think he's going to bring a physical force. It adds more of a physical force to that defensive line, along with Christian Wilkins, who they signed from the Miami Dolphins. Michael Mayer, a punishing type of a tight end that's just sort of a brute force kind of a guy. And even Brock Bowers, I know he's more of a fluid athlete, but he brings a physicality. There's a size element to him. And yes, he runs by people, but there were a lot of times where he was running over people as well. It's a different level of physicality that he brings. And can you imagine, forget just lining up in jumbo with a Michael Mayer on one side and maybe Brock Bowers alongside him or on the other side as another tight end. Imagine Michael Mayer in line and Brock Bowers lined up in the slot on run plays where Michael Mayer is getting after it on the line of scrimmage and Brock Bowers out of the slot is going to hunt cornerbacks to punish them. That's going to also help the run game as well. So you're starting to see the makings of this physicality that the Raiders and that Antonio Pierce and Tom Telesco are trying to add to this building. And you certainly saw it in their first two picks, and that includes Jackson Powers Johnson, the fabulous center last year for Oregon, won the Remington Award as the best center in the country. Now he's going to be the Raiders starting right guard, and we're going to bring in James Crepia right now from the Oregonian to talk about that. James, thanks for taking some time to talk to us. And I know I was on the call with you, the Zoom call on Friday I'm calling him JPJ. I'm sure it was a nice moment for you, having known the kid and covered the kid.
Yeah, I mean, quite the accomplishment for the young man. And again, to me, what stands out is obviously not just all the numbers you can pull up and Pro Football Focus and won the Remington Trophy and really was that good of center for Oregon this past year. But look, this is a pretty heralded recruit going back to his recruitment, yet didn't have the offer from Utah, the in-state school that he was hoping to get, and goes on to not only do the things that he accomplished at Oregon, but this is still somebody who's really young in their football career and that he was only a one-year starter. Now, he played as a true freshman, and he played as a true sophomore, but this time a year ago, when we were talking to him, it was how is the progress coming along at center and stepping into that role, not in a doubting way, because he did play quite a bit as a freshman and quite a bit more, even as a sophomore. But it was a move from guard to center. And, that's a year ago. Pre-spring a year ago, it's okay. Like, he's taking over for a guy who's been a multi-year starter and was drafted in the NFL draft. This time last year was Alex Forsythe. And now, who he credited for helping him, get to this point. And now in 1 year's time to go from, you're stepping into a starting role and how's that going to look to Remington Trophy winner and NFL draft pick and the like, quite the ascent, rapidly so, and he put in a lot of work to make it happen.
James, his ascent to the starting job at center, and you mentioned the fact that he played as a freshman, he played as a sophomore, so he was still getting in time, but he wasn't a starter. Was that just because the Oregon offensive line was just that good and the players were that good in front of him?
Yeah.
Which is a pretty good deal to have if you're Oregon.
Yes. I mean, look, it started under Mario Cristobal, and credit to him, where he and Alex Mirabal, the offensive line coach at the time, and those are the guys who recruited JPJ at the time and brought him here. But it started under them where, look, you guys know you're on the West Coast. The West Coast is not known for strength in the trenches and incredible offensive line play. That is not the pedigree of what was the Pac-12 Conference.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't mean that there weren't teams who were playing, you know, with multi-tight ends, what Stanford and Cal and whatever. Yeah, they were doing those things at the time, and a lot of that was because of talent deficiency, quite frankly. They were playing a different kind of game. Well, now, go back a couple of years, it changed here under Cristobal, and that obviously he's an offensive line guy. And you look and see what the line that he inherited and those guys and what those turned into with a Jake Hansen, who was drafted and now is with the Jets, but was drafted by the Packers a number of years ago, and Shane Lemieux, who was drafted by the Giants, and Calvin Throckmorton, who was one of the highest UDFAs a couple of years ago, started with the Saints, now he's over with the Broncos, spent some time with the Titans even. So they had an offensive line, and then Penei Sewell with that group, mm-hmm. and what they became. So that was the line in 18 and 19. And then there was the big change, and oh, they're losing all these guys. Well, the next wave came in, and we won't even talk about the 20 season because that was so messed up, but
right.
A lot of them were there. And then you have a guy like Forsythe, and you have other players who come in, junior college players who come in particular, and a TJ Bass, who's now with the Cowboys, and a Malasala Amavai-Laulu, who's gone on to be drafted by the Ravens. Yeah, so being behind that contingent, that group, well, what was that group? That group was a lot of guys who made it to the league, and JPJ was the next one up in that group. And then, like I say, he steps in last year, 1 year as a starter, only needs 1 year because, yeah, he was that good. And, like I say, he delivers in every way imaginable, becomes, like I say, you know, the latest in what has become a pretty good line of Oregon centers to where, you know, one of the questions I asked him the other day, but, yeah, they kind of have the rightful claim right now as
yes.
center U in the collegiate sphere because four of the last five centers have made it and been drafted into the league. And the one exception being a one-year starter in between Hronas Grasu and Jake Hansen. I mean, you know, these are the kinds of guys who they are, and he got drafted higher than any of them. So that's exactly how good he was. And like I say, you can pull up all the numbers from PFF in particular to tell
yeah.
you how much they loved him and how efficient he was on the field.
We're talking to James Crepia from the Oregonian. He covers Oregon. He covered Jackson Powers Johnson up there in Eugene. You could follow him at James Crepia on X. All right, so now he's making the switch back to guard due to circumstance here in Las Vegas. They just re-signed Andre James for the next 3 years or so. Are we feeling like that's just going to be a very seamless transition for him?
Yeah. I mean, again, he had played guard his first two seasons here, and really all three of those, you know, interior spots are very like and very similar in a lot of ways. Outside of snapping the ball, which he never really had any problem with, outside of that, there isn't a monumental difference, quite honestly. And yeah, I know about line calls and the like, but quite frankly, having a guard who has experience with and knowledge of line calls is not a bad thing to have at the NFL. You know, whether or not they have to actually do it or just rely on that, you know, knowledge and ability is, you know, that'll help. But no, it's a position he's played before. Like I say, played extensively. So no, I think that'll be absolutely seamless. And should the day ever come that he has to play center again, he'll pick up right where he left off.
You know, when I look at him, I see a big physical player, but I also see somebody that just looks like a really good athlete as well for that size. Can we envision the Raiders using him as a pull guy at guard and leading the run from that perspective?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, pull up his highlight reels, pull up the stuff, you know, all the cut ups that you'll get, and you can do it at your own leisure. And they pulled him from center, and this is one of the most willing downfield blockers from the center position that you'll probably ever see at the college level.
And I'm not just saying that because, you know, like, look, I'm not from here.
Right.
I didn't go to Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not some homer.
Right.
I mean, look, Penei Sewell was a monster at this level, and he didn't even get to do it for the extended time because of the 2020 season mainly. But mm-hmm. in the limited time that he was here, you saw a guy who would get into the open field and just absolutely bulldoze defensive backs because how in the world? And now he's the richest tackle in the National Football League, to nobody's surprise here. You look at JPJ, and you can, again, pull up the cut-ups. There are many of them where he is pulling around, and if he's not pulling, if he's just outright run-blocking, where this isn't just a matter of looking for the second level or plowing through there, look into the third level. There's a highlight, I want to say it might have been the Colorado game, I could be wrong, it was okay. earlier in the season, where, I mean, look, you can ask him about it, and undoubtedly will come up, just because it's amusing in that how comical it truly was. He's all the way downfield, attempting to block for Bo Nix on what was the left sideline of the play, the opposing sideline in the stadium, and he dives, and I mean like mid-air Superman dives in an attempt just to cause a blocking capacity along the sideline. And it is utterly ridiculous because you see this 300-pound team just go full Superman in an attempt not to push someone out of the way, but just to try to create a lane, to try to, you know, be another force in between for his quarterback. And this is 30-plus yards down the field. This is who this guy is.
Right.
I say, like, he is exactly the kind of guy. Pulling is the least of it. It's you're going to be asking him to try to simplify things, not because he wants to try to take on everybody imaginable to block. That is who Jackson Powers Johnson is.
Wow. Talking to James Kupia from the Oregonian, he covered Jackson Powers Johnson, the Raiders' newest guard at the University of Oregon. Obviously, we didn't get a chance to talk to him a lot on Zoom. I'm looking forward to getting to know him when he gets here in Las Vegas. But just the way he carried himself, we saw the footage of him and his parents and family members celebrating when the Raiders made the call, hearing him talk and express himself. I get the feel like this is more than just a player, but also somebody that the Raiders can count on to eventually be a leader of this football team. And they've been real protective, James, in terms of when you talk to Antonio Pierce and now Tom Telesco, of who they're letting into the building. I know that sounds crazy because it's the Raiders, but they really are. They've made a conscious effort, and it's been a couple of years now, to make sure they bring in the right type of people here into the building. And I feel like JPJ kind of fits that kind of a mold, but you know it better than I do. Is he somebody that the Raiders could probably count on down the road as sort of a leader of the team?
That's how he was here, and not just because he was the award-winning center here this past year. Again, this is a guy that mentioned Cristobal and Mirabal earlier. They literally, and this is not hyperbolic, this isn't, oh, he works hard. They mm-hmm. spend all the time, you know, you'll hear all the cliches around the draft. Everybody's the hardest worker in the building. Everybody spends all the extra hours. Yeah, and that certainly helps a lot of these young men reach the league, no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
As a true freshman, guys, again, behind a lot, knowing he's probably not going to start, okay? It wasn't totally outside the realm of possibility, but he's probably not going to start because of the sheer volume of the older, more experienced guys who were ahead of him at the time. He was getting to the building, I'm not kidding, before 5 in the morning
wow.
on his own and bringing other freshmen with him who were basically just begging to be, you know, leave me alone to sleep for a little longer because he was worried. He's been upfront about this. I'm not speaking out of school. He had anxiety at the time about being prepared,
right,
and being prepared enough and wanting to be prepared enough and feeling like he was prepared enough. So he was putting, you're talking about extra, they literally had to lock him out of the building
wow.
to make sure that he would actually get enough sleep. Now, this is a couple of years removed now, so he's gotten, you know, he joked at Pro Day about, now he only gets here at 5 in the morning. but, I mean, he was literally getting here at 4 a.m. At the building, you know, when they normally are getting in, you know, 6:30, maybe, sometimes 7.
Right.
This is somebody who's putting in the kind of time. And, it's, you know, look, you saw him on draft night with how happy he was, and certainly, frankly, that was about as raw as it gets from him because, yeah, naturally so. But he's a bit of a jokester. He's a character. You know, from a media standpoint, you know, he's quite the personality and a heck of a quote and those kinds of things. And You know, that'll undoubtedly come out in time, no doubt.
Right.
But you talked about, I think, back at the Senior Bowl or whatever, when guys had, you know, autograph seekers would ask for his autograph and how he would sign it and whatever. I think it may have been at the Combine, actually. And it's, you know, he would inscribe it with a reference to an SNL skit or whatever. Yeah. Like, that's the, that's, you're getting all of it. You're getting the gregarious personality. Yeah, everybody talks about the burger that was named after him at a local restaurant here in Eugene and stuff. Yeah, but and that comes to the two. If he didn't have all the personality and the like, you know, he may not get some of those opportunities. But yeah, from the hard work and everything that he does on the field and the things around it to be prepared to do those things. To, and I don't pretend to be the friendliest with you know, college players who are 15 to 20 years my junior these days. But no, truly, like, if you had talked about a leader type personality, yes, he's got it.
So I lost track of how many Oregon players actually got drafted this week, and it felt like every time I looked up, there was an Oregon player coming off the board, and there was one stretch where it was just like every other player felt like was drafted. And I know that you knew that that was probably going to be the case, but any surprises in terms of the volume of draft picks that Oregon produced this year?
No. Not for those of us who are around here, no. Mm-hmm. Because quite frankly, again, 100% exposure here. I had every one of them written ahead of time.
There you like, go. I know that.
Drafted, I was confident enough of like that all eight would be drafted insofar as I had stories ready for all eight who were drafted.
I love
it. No, that wasn't surprising in the least. And for the UDFAs, that they would end up being the priority UDFAs that they were. So yes, there was that run there in the fourth round where there was quite a flurry, which was quite fun. I can imagine not only for the young men and their families, but as somebody who had to keep hitting the publish button along the way, yes, it was quite the flurry there on Saturday. But no, not from the sheer volume. And of course, every college fan base thinks their players should be picked higher or lower or whatever case it, you know, and every rival fan base they should be low, whatever. Yeah, you know, so that there's conjecture about that in out there in the social media verse of the world, but no, in terms of the sheer volume, no, that was not surprising, not to me in the least, because like I say, I quite literally wrote the stories on each of them in preparation for that eventuality.
Yeah, and for our non-reporter beat writer listeners, we call that a laydown in the industry. It's you're just prepared for the story because you know that it's inevitable and you just have it written. So you, as James was talking about, you can hit publish as quickly as possible and all our readers can say, wow, you were all on top of that. You really knew, you know, so anyway, little trick of the trade. But yeah, I've been there with you, James, for sure. All right. Last question for you. And we're talking to James Krepia from the Oregonian. He covers the great Oregon football program, which by the way, is now moving to the Big Ten. Still hurts me to say that, but it is what it is. We just have to live to deal with it. Bo Nix going number 12 to the Denver Broncos. I kind of had a sneaky suspicion that that's where he was going to land up one way or another, whether they stayed at 12 or traded down to get him at 12. But I guess it was pretty much cinched when six quarterbacks were drafted in the first 11 picks prior to the Denver Broncos picking, and I felt like at that point they weren't going to let him escape their grasp. What are the Broncos getting in Bo Nix and that pairing with Sean Payton?
You know, I think what they're getting is, again, all the things that you can quickly pull up by way of statistics and what he was able to accomplish and the completion percentage record this season, which, you know, it's obviously, yes, it's real and it's the accomplishment that is. One of the things that does translate awfully well from college to the next level, particularly, you know, a power conference school to the next level, is completion percentage. Now, that's not to say he's going to go out there and complete 75-78% of his pass in the NFL. I mean, let's keep some degree of you know, humility about the process. But even if you, as Sean Payton and folks in Denver talked about the last couple of days, even when you take out some of the quick screens and the bubble screens and those things that, absolutely inflated some of those completion percentage statistics, and that became, again, a talking point here, there, and everywhere in the collegiate sphere this and in the draft process, quite frankly, about his vertical passing ability and arm strength and et cetera, et cetera. Even when you take those things out, which, frankly, I think was a pretty unfair narrative that was put on Bo about that, because when he did throw the ball down the field, they're awfully good.
Right.
You know, the big plays that Oregon hit on last year, they did not get padded by a whole bunch of catch and runs and a whole ton of yards after the catch. There were a lot of them, but it wasn't because, oh, he threw a five-yard slant that Tez Johnson or Troy Franklin or Bucky Irving then turned into a 40-yard gain, like 30 times over. Yeah, there were a couple of plays like that. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
There were plenty of vertical passes. But what you're getting is the accuracy, the leadership. A lot of those quarterbacks were drafted this weekend. A lot, not all of them, certainly. You know, half of them were underclassmen guys who were really, really effective in a the amount of years that they had to spend. And then you had the contingent who were the uber older guys who had put it in over 5 and 6 years and had each of their own respective journeys to get there. But bottom line, age, wisdom, experience, the leadership component that comes with him. With Bo, it's, you know, it's the son of a coach who's gone through the number of systems that he has, where learning a new system is something he's done over and over and over again very well. I think you heard that from Peyton and others, back on Thursday night, in terms of they sent him the packets, they sent him everything, in terms of offensive install, as if they were, and when they visited with him, and to see at what point, does this guy fail. And according to them, it sounded like he really didn't
right.
At any point. he had basically that volume of material, committed and was able to go through it with them, not only to their liking, but almost to their surprise, exactly how proficient he was, how quickly he was under that, circumstance. So that's what they're getting. They're getting a guy who's got that level of aptitude and that level of professionalism in the way that he's gone about it. And preparing and putting himself in that position. And yeah, there were some struggles earlier on, no doubt about it. Those Auburn years weren't always the prettiest. But like we talked about last time I was on, guys, like sometimes that wasn't, when you kind of dig into that, sometimes those issues along the way may not have always been on Bo, even if fans may have wanted it to believe that was the case. It may not have exactly always been the case. Be that as it may, that's years ago.
Yeah.
That's what, we're not talking about every, the issues we're not talking about with some of those other quarterbacks who were drafted in the top 12 picks. Are we going back 3 or 4 years ago to throws that Jaden Daniels made that weren't any good?
Right, exactly.
Doesn't seem like we're doing that very much, but boy, we seem to be harping on the good Bo, bad Bo thing from Auburn, because that was an SEC narrative from 4 and 5 years ago. Who cares anymore?
Exactly. I agree.
What does it matter? What he did these last 2 years was absolutely remarkable, and it's in part because of, again, preparation, experience, and all the like. But again, I would put the amount of autonomy that he had under two different coordinators here at Oregon up against anything you've seen in college football, not just these past 2 years, in general. You don't see college quarterbacks have that level of autonomy from their coordinators and head coaches.
Mm-hmm.
That speaks to him. It speaks to Kenny Dillingham. It speaks to Will Stein, the OCs here at Oregon all these 2 years, and Dan Lanning, to be able to support and be willing to give their quarterback for these past 2 years, and now it looks like they're going to do the same with Dylan Gabriel, to give them that amount of freedom and ability. And you earn that because of what you show in the meeting room, in the film room, how you go about preparing for it. That's what Nick's did. That's who Nick's is. That's what the Broncos are getting in that way. And again, for the purposes here, that's what they're hoping getting in Dylan Gabriel for this next year, and that we're having the same conversation about him a year from now. But yeah, that's what they're getting, a really accurate, proficient guy who attacks it with professionalism.
Yeah, well, don't be surprised if we give you a call sometime next year to talk about the new quarterback and maybe the possibility of him being, like you just said, right where Bo Nix ended up, or maybe even higher after next year. I'm really fascinated to see how that all unfolds. James Krepia, thank you so much. You've been an invaluable source of information about Oregon football. I know we'll be talking to you down the road. Enjoy your travels in the Big Ten this year, and we'll catch up to you sometime next season.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
You got it. That's James Krepia from the Oregonian. Does a fantastic job and speaks and writes with a great eloquence to describe the Raiders' new guard, Jackson Powers Johnson. And I do think that Raider Nation, I think this, we'll say this about the entire draft class, but in particular, when you're talking about Brock Bowers, I think he's not the most talkative type. It's kind of all football guy with him. I think Raider Nation is going to fall in love with him in terms of his football ability. And I think in JPJ's case, the football ability and the personality and the leadership that he's going to show. I believe that he's going to be a fan favorite in short order. And I think Michael Mayer, you go back to last year, and I think he's going to take a big step forward. And he's also just a top-level human being in so many different ways, whether it's the work ethic, what he's doing as a football field. When we talk to him, when I talk to him, he's just a really impressive young man. So when you start talking about, Max Crosby, it goes without saying, Max Crosby, what he's all about. But more and more, you're starting to look at the people that the Raiders are bringing into this building, and they're really good human beings, winning human beings, winning the game of life. In addition to winning on the football field. And I think that goes a long way toward what you're trying to build. And it'll be interesting to see how now the coaching staff puts it all together. I'm sorry, Luke Getsy is tossing and turning in excitement over, oh, now I got Brock Bowers along with Michael Mayer, along with Devontae Adams, along with Jacoby Myers, along with Trey Tucker, along with Zamir White. Yeah, I could do something with that. That's going to be fun to put together. Now, of course, they got to get the quarterback up a level in order to maximize all of that talent that the Raiders have on this football team. I'm Vinny Bonsignore. It's JT the Brick Show. Give us a call, 702-365-9200. We want your thoughts on this draft, the top of the draft, the middle of the draft, undrafted free agency, where this roster is. We want your thoughts, so give us a call, 702-365-9200.
I know he's excited about it, but I don't want to speak for him, so I'll let him kind of talk about him when he gets up here eventually. He's a defensive guy, obviously, but now he's the head coach. He does see it with a wide lens. So, offense, defense, whatever, he thinks could best help the team. He was 100% on board with the pick. But I'll let him explain it in his own way when he gets up here.
That was Tom Telesco talking about his cohort, Antonio Pierce, and pointing out how he coaches more than just the defensive side of the football now. It's the whole team is his, and I always chuckle at that because it's real. I remember my first training camp covering the Rams when Sean McVay became the head coach. By the way, it's the JT the Brick Show. I'm Vinny Bonsignore. Thank you for joining us. We want your calls, 365-9200, 702-365-9200, your thoughts on the draft. But literally, Sean McVay's first practice as the head coach of the Rams in training camp, they ended it with a nice little 11-on-11 session between the first team offense, first team defense, and the first team defense just kicked the Rams offense butt, led by Aaron Donald and that crew. And we talked to Sean after practice, and I could literally see smoke coming out of his ears. I'm thinking to myself, is he mad because, and he was an offensive coordinator in Washington, is he mad because the defense owned the offense that day? And later on, I ended up talking to some people that were in the locker room with him afterwards. And I go, was that why he was so mad? Because the offense just had a bad day against the defense? And they're like, yeah, actually it was. We had to remind him, this is your team. The whole team is your team. So even when the defense does good, you could be happy. It's no longer, you're not the offensive coordinator anymore going against a defense. You don't care what the defense is doing. You just want to succeed on offense. You could be happy when both things happen. The defense had a good day today. Be okay with it. And I had to remind myself, like, he had to adjust his thinking because normally in practice when he's the offensive coordinator, he just wanted his side of the ball to dominate play after play after play after play. And that's what he got his contentment and his happiness from. In this case, he had to also be happy for the defense, and I'm sure Antonio Pierce feels the same way now, going from a defensive-minded player, a defensive-minded coach, to now the head coach. The whole crew is your team, and you can bask in all of their glory. We're going to go back out to the phones. Raider Dave in Denver. What's up, Raider Dave?
Hey, Vinny. Kiss on each cheek, zero for Gazi.
How are you? Hey, I got a quick question for you.
Yeah.
Where is Western State?
I wish I knew. I think I've got somebody I work with that has a kid going there, and I was too embarrassed to ask, to be honest with you.
Okay, yeah.
Cause I want to say it's northern, like out on 70, way out west. I want to say.
Okay, because that's where Austin Eckler went. So when people are talking about, the level of play of Dylan Laub from New Hampshire, I go, it can't be any worse than Western University in Colorado.
Yeah, I, I don't know if that's a small school around Grand Junction or what that is, but yeah, it's a good question. I hadn't researched that. I think if Raider Nation and the intelligent ones in Raider Nation know about football, they're going to look back at the last few years and compare that to when they were last successful with Gruden going to the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And that is ball control. And I think with the type of quarterbacks that you have in the AFC West, you have to figure out, draft, and pick up players that are going to help you develop a team to beat your adversaries in the AFC West. So how do you slow down a Mahomes or a Burrow in Cincinnati, if you would, or even the other quarterbacks, the new one, Knicks and the Charger quarterback? Well, it's going to be ball control. And if you can't get to a quarterback that's going to compete on a level to air it out in a shootout and all that, again, it goes back to defense or run game. So if you look back, they drafted Wilson. They picked up a great defensive tackle. They got Max a while back. They've been trying to fortify that defensive line for a while, as well as trying to rebuild the offensive line since they had a couple of Pro Bowlers on that offensive line. And the history of the Raiders is they don't go anywhere without having Pro Bowlers on that offensive line and having a decent run game. So, unfortunately, Jacobs, it's, age out, contract out, whatever it is, injury out, whatever you want to look at it. You need to keep them fresh. They got Zeus. But if you just only look at it with Renfro gone, and what do you want to bring in to do more jobs, to do more things, and open up the offense in the passing game as well as fortifying it in the run game? Well, it's got to be Michael Mayer last year and Bowers this year. And I believe that the only way to slow down these teams, including Kansas City, is to have a great run game, control the clock, and play just lights-out defense. And I think over the past few seasons, we have seen different coaches come in and be interim or whatever, but the focus has pretty much stayed the same, that in order to make this Vegas team one that's a player in the AFC West, this is a common look from those who know football. This is the direction they have to go because they're not going to get one of those top five, top eight quarterbacks in the league.
Yeah, and that's a great point. Until further notice, with this group of quarterbacks and whoever emerges as the starter, that's how you're going to have to win games. You're going to have to play great defense, and you're going to have to be a ball control kind of an offense. But I will say this. You also have to have – it's one thing to be a ball control offense, but I think more and more – you also need guys that could take it to the house from anywhere on the football field. And I think you obviously have that in Devontae. I think Jacoby Myers is more of your possession receiver. I think a guy like Michael Mayer is a guy that you need 13 yards for a first down. You could throw it to him and he'll get it for you. You want to score in the red zone, you throw it to him. You want to attack the middle of the field, you could attack the middle of the field with him. But I think with a guy like Bowers, he is the guy that can – he's the explosiveness. He's the guy that could take it to the house from anywhere on the field. And you're going to see that with the Raiders. He's going to surprise a lot of people in the NFL with that athleticism. So he's a guy that you can throw it to on a screen, and he's liable to get you 50 yards, 60 yards. I'm telling you that right now. So, yes, I'm with you. Run the ball. Be a ball-controlled defense. Play great play great defense. Be a ball-control offense. But you also have to have some explosivity, and I think that a guy like Brock Bowers – certainly brings that to the equation, and you need that in the NFL. You need to be able to score easy as well.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And another position that he sort of covers up is the fullback position. If the Raiders wanted to go ahead and bring him a motion across and block an A-gap or whatever for Zeus to follow up, they now have a person that could do that. Renfro could never do that from the slot. Now, Renfro could return kicks, and I don't think Bowers is going to do that. But they also have Tucker who can, go ahead and outrun everybody on the offense and go ahead and do a strike. There's a couple other players that are obviously very fast that may have some special teams duties. And with the new kickoff rule, I think that the way teams are going to go is less beef and more of an athlete on the kickoff and kick return teams, because once you're past that line, you're gone. Janikowski or whoever, nobody's going to run down, a 4-6 guy who gets through that, pseudo line of scrimmage or kick line of scrimmage, if you want to call it that. Once that kid's gone past that point, they are gone. No kicker's going to run that down. So I think that the way we're seeing special teams formulated, the types of athletes we're seeing that come to that part of the team are starting to get a little bit lighter and faster.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Raider Dave. Really appreciate it. Sometimes people that make the comparisons, I saw a lot of, oh, he's Hunter Renfro. He's a tight end version of Hunter Renfro. I'm like, what are you watching? What are you talking about? Hunter Renfro was a possession type of wide receiver. He's very good at that. You know, and you know, there were a couple of times where early on, especially where they threw it to him long, but he's not somebody that you just put the football in his hand and tell him, go do your thing and go attack players. I mean, Brock Bowers is the ultimate weapon, a fast, big, physical freak of nature type of a player. You know, Hunter Renfro was none of that. I mean, he was a really good, solid football player, but he's not Brock Bowers. I remember when it was Cooper Kupp, and people were like, oh, he's Jordy Nelson. I'm like, no, Jordy Nelson was a literally state champion track runner, like 100 yards, the meter, the hurdles. He was like a sprinter. You know, he is a fast human being that attacked people vertically with that speed. Cooper Kupp is a 4.7 40 guy that's just a big physical and quick and all that, but he wasn't the straight line runner that Jordy was. So yeah, there's no comparison between Hunter Renfro and Brock Bowers. They're two different animals, man. They're two different types of people and players. So just enjoy kind of what you have. And one thing I'll also say about this with Bowers and Michael Mayer, you're going to be able, as the Raiders and Luke Getsy, to play tempo with those two players on the field. And I can't tell you what kind of mismatches that's going to create. Because if you go up tempo, no huddle, you're forcing the defense to stay as is, because you can't send in replacement players, you know, subs in that. You can't sub in and out when another team is going up tempo. And because Brock Bowers and, to a little bit of lesser extent, but Michael Mayer can line up all over the field, whether it's in line, the slot, or out wide. Now you have two weapons that you can deploy anywhere you want on the field and feel comfortable being able to do it, rather than subbing in, having to huddle up and sub somebody in that does that, that you're more comfortable in the slot or out wide or whatever the case is. So you're going to force teams to stay with their personnel grouping and defend Michael Mayer and Brock Bowers and everyone else on the, you know, from Devontae Adams to Jacoby Myers and everybody else. And so you're going to find yourself in great situations where Brock Bowers is lined up wide in that kind of a situation against a smaller cornerback and is going to be able to dominate those types of matchups. Or even better, or sometimes even better, line him up against a linebacker or a safety, and just have a physical advantage from the speed standpoint to the jumping standpoint over that kind of a player. So there's all sorts of different ways to be able to attack opponents now, along with Michael Mayer, and they're going to play on the field together. This isn't a replacement for Michael Mayer. It's somebody that's going to play in conjunction with Michael Mayer. Keep the calls coming, 702-365-9200. Vinny Bunch, you're filling in for JT the Brick, and happy to have you talking about the draft.
Yeah, I mean, and also, you know, we're looking to add more playmakers to the offense, and they come in all shapes and sizes and all different positions. And, you know, we love Michael Mayer. I love Michael Mayer, and he's a really good player. He's going to take another big jump this year. But he get a chance to add just another dimension to the offense, whether it's a tight end, a hybrid receiver, whatever it is. You know, we need more playmakers on that side of the ball, so I think he's going to really help us there. And, you know, like, as a high-level player in college, you know, true junior, he's 21 years old, so he's, you know, very young, still developing. He's got some natural football skills combined with some high level athletic ability and speed. So yeah, really happy to have him.
That was Tom Telesco, Raiders general manager, talking about Brock Bowers, the new Raiders tight end. And as Connor Riley from the Dog Pound explained today, I think, and he made an interesting point, hadn't quite thought about it, But the presence of Michael Mayer on the Raiders really allows now Luke Getsy and the Raiders to be able to use Brock as they're not going to have to pigeonhole any, you know, as a strictly a tight end, because you have Michael Mayer to be that blocker. You have Michael Mayer to be a weapon in the pass game, which he will be. So you can use Michael in a more traditional tight end sense, and there's going to be a lot of different ways that they use Michael Mayer. But it allows them, because they have that base covered, to now be able to use Brock as more of just a weapon, just lining him up in the slot, lining him up as a H-back, lining him up out wide. There's all sorts of different ways that you're going to be able to utilize him just as a weapon and not feel pigeonholed to have him just do tight end type things. And you really can't do that unless you have the other end of it taken care of, and that's Michael Mayer, who, you know, we'd be shortchanging him to talk about him just as a traditional tight end, because he, in his own way, is a weapon as well. But him being there allows the Raiders now to use Brock in a way that goes well above and beyond just a tight end. And I think that's the beauty of that pick. And, you know, we've been talking about this, about, I know that Raider Nation is like, wow, they didn't reach for somebody. That's the first time that they've done that in a long time. Well, you know, honestly, when you think about it, after that 2021 first-round pick of Alex Leatherwood, they've done a pretty good job since then of drafting. Trayvon Merrick, Malcolm Kuntz, Divine Diablo, Nate Hobbs came from the 21 draft class. That's 4 starters from the 2021 draft class. Obviously, Alex Leatherwood was a complete bust, but you still came up with 4, not just starters, but pretty darn good starters now, especially with Malcolm taking the big step up. 2022, that was Dave Ziegler's first draft. Remember, they didn't have a first or second round pick, so they didn't pick again. They didn't pick until the third round. Now you're talking about Dylan Parham, Zamir White, Thayer Munford. As of right now, today, Thayer Munford's going to be your right tackle. Zamir White's your starting running back. Dylan Parham is your starting guard. That's 2 starters without the benefit, by the way, of a first-round pick, or second round for that matter. Now you go back to last year, Tyree Wilson. I think we all understand that last year was a wash for Tyree Wilson. There was a lot of extenuating circumstances that led to it. Nobody was hiding behind that. Everyone understood in the building there was a plan for Tyree that included, obviously, 2023, but was more geared for 2024 or 2025, his breakout years. And Tyree Wilson might absolutely do that this year. The future is still bright for him. But then you got Michael Mayer, a starter. Byron Young took a redshirt year last year. We'll see what he's all about this year. Trey Tucker has a chance to be a good, solid player. Ja'Corian Bennett started the season last year as the starting cornerback, and I know the Raiders still think highly of him. Aiden O'Connell right now is the starting quarterback. Christopher Smith, we talked to Connor Riley. His time is coming too. I truly believe that, whether it's here or someplace else. But this is a good quality player, especially now just as a depth piece. Amari Burney, a player who, when he got on the football field last year due to injuries, showed that he could play. So I think he's somebody right now that's a depth piece that could graduate to a bigger role down the line. Nessa Jade Silvera, we'll see what they have with the Raiders in him, the defensive tackle from Arizona State and Miami. Now you add Brock Bowers. You add Jackson Powers-Johnson, 2 guys who I believe are going to start day one. We'll see what they have in DJ Glaze and everybody else. But this notion that the Raiders have gone years and years and years now by reaching for players. Yes, they did it with Alex Leatherwood in 2021. We don't have to go through the entire list of years prior to that. But since that Leatherwood pick, it's 3 straight drafts now. The bulk of the 2021 class, the 2022 class, the 2023 class, and now this year's class. It feels like they're starting to get it right. And the roster reflects that. The amount of starters that they've got over these last couple of years, including the 2 right now that I think you could just go ahead and pencil in, they're starting to do it the right way. And I think this roster certainly benefits for it. Thank you to JT of the Brick for having me sit in. Thank you to all the callers. Thank you to Connor Riley from the Dog Pound and James Crepia from the Oregonian for shedding some great light on the Raiders' new draft picks. We're going to hand it off to Q Myers, who's back in Las Vegas after a whirlwind tour and trip to Detroit. Welcome back, Q. Thank you again. Catch me tomorrow morning on the Tailgate Show. It's off to Q.
Appreciate it. Thank you, guys.